Good evening. Welcome back to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Darkness Radio, your home for the best in paranormal talk radio every Saturday and Sunday, 9 p.m. to midnight. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Across the board from me, Tim Dennis. Want to make a quick mention, as I said earlier on, we're going to have a little contest this month. We want to hear your scary stories, but we want them written in a novel kind of form. We want them written in like a ghost story would, so we can read it on air, not just your personal account of, oh, you know, this one time at band camp, I was spooked in bed, and that was really cool. I want you to actually, we want it like a, you know, a ghost story. Whether it's real or not, it doesn't matter, but it's keep it no more than 1,500 to 2,000 words. We need all submissions no later than October 26th. And we're going to go through, pick the top 10 stories, and we're going to try to read some of them on future episodes of Darkness Radio. So again, we need all of them by October 26th, and then we're going to be giving away some cool prizes for that as well. If you want to be a part of that and you think you're a good writer and you've got some great stories that you want to tell, you can send them to dave@darknessradio.com. In the subject line, put scary story contest and write your best scary stories. Let's see what we can do, and we'll share that with the rest of the listening audience and the world to hear your stories on air. Right now, though, we're going to go to our guests for this evening. And, you know, on the kind of heels of 2 weeks ago, two and a half weeks ago, I was on the episode of Paranormal State from A&E. It's called First Contact. If you go to paranormalstate.com, I think you can watch the episode in whole, or you can go to my website at darknessradio.com, and right on the front, there's three little video vignettes. That's the entire episode. You can watch them right there. They will open up in a bigger screen, so you can watch the whole episode there and see what we had happen with UFOs. Well, one of the stories I've been hearing for quite a while is about this group out of California that's very good at filming and getting actual UFO activity online, or on film, rather. And that's what I wanted to aim for tonight, is to have these guys join us, talk a little bit about what they do, how they do what they do. And it's just kind of an amazing feat. So first hour, we're going to spend talking about filming UFOs. Second hour, we're going to talk a little bit more about a film that they've worked on, in alien-human hybrids. So let's start off the show. We're going to bring on JJ as our first guest. We'll have JJ introduce us to the rest of the cast. JJ, thanks for joining us this evening. JJ, you with us?
Short form, but not the long one.
JJ, can you hear us? Well, we can hear JJ. Unfortunately, JJ can't hear us, I'm afraid.
Yeah, this
Tim?
Guy knows Bill Murphy worse than
me. Danichi, are you with us on the line?
Hello, I'm here.
Okay. For some reason, JJ's not hearing us talk, but I guess we can hear you. Thank you very much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing? And eventually, we'll see if JJ and Sean are online with us and can join us as well. JJ, Sean, are you there with us yet?
Hello.
Who is this, JJ?
Hey, this is Sean.
Hey, Sean. You can't hear us?
Barely.
Okay, that's strange. Hopefully we'll be able to get this worked out during the show. I'll speak up a little bit for you as we go along. Danichi, maybe you can start us off. And am I pronouncing that correctly? Is it Danichi?
Yes, Danichi Vamphir.
Vamphir. Okay, Danichi, why don't you tell us a little bit about it, what you guys do, and then maybe kind of introduce the different players on this that we can talk about.
Well, it's specifically like in the California area. In the last few years, we've been interested in some UFO activity, some reports, eyewitness accounts, and we thought we would just go in and, as a group, different backgrounds, and just take a look at it from an investigative point of view, and to find out that some of these eyewitness accounts were credible, we just moved from there and just kept going, and it just turned into something really interesting.
Now, had you had experiences with UFOs in the past yourself?
Right, yeah. In fact, the first time that I got exposed to an unusual event like that was when I was in the military, and it was during the Gulf War. I was a field medical technician, and the first time it happened, I was with a unit called 27 Golf Company, and we were just in the middle of the desert in Saudi Arabia, and there was an unusual event that lasted for about 45 minutes. I guess you would call this a mass sighting. And after the event, because I decided to go towards the light, the Marines kind of stepped back, and they took their weapons out and pointed in the direction. And they didn't know what decision to make at that time. And it got very confusing for a lot of people. So they basically let me out of that group. They had me identify what it was that I saw versus what the Marines saw, and they felt uncomfortable after that situation. So they basically moved me out of that unit and put me on the front lines. So.
And you were in Army Special Forces, right? You were a medic, is that right?
Yeah, I was in the Navy, but the thing about a corpsman goes out with the Marines. It could be Special Forces, it could be Navy SEALs. I got in with Combat Engineers Battalion. I've been out with Recon. So I've done a lot of work, yes, with Special Forces.
And you actually are a remote viewer and a surveillance expert as well, correct?
Correct.
Now, with remote viewing, I'm just curious, with somebody that has that ability and your interest in ufology, have you ever tried to remote view into a target like a UFO?
Yes. In fact, that was the most unusual thing. When they started this program, in fact, the Marine Corps didn't have, there's nothing on record about the Marine Corps having a remote viewing group, which was kind of unusual because when I got down to Camp Pendleton in 1991 in December, they were actually looking for people without saying it out, you know, right out. We're looking for people with unusual abilities or people who seem to be have more of an edge in combat situations. The remote viewing that we were doing is to identify a target in the battlefield during combat and to find out without any other assistance where that person is, where an item is. If we're in a minefield, can we locate without using anything else but the remote viewing aspects, a device or something of that nature that can actually harm U.S. military, U.S. troops? And I thought that was I just thought it was fun. But then all of a sudden, the guys that we were with were picking out targets that were in the air. And so you have a primary and secondary. The primary is the person who's responsible for identifying the location of a target. And the secondary writes down that information and gets it to the field commander. So we started getting in this aspect where people are getting air targets, and they're everywhere. I mean, we're getting targets from up in Washington, Seattle area, down in Mexico, and they're like, this has nothing to do with combat. What is this? And what's coming through our airspace?
Now, when they're seeing these targets, are they seeing inside the target, or are they just seeing the target flying over these areas?
Oh, that's an interesting question. We had an individual, he was a Lance Corporal. He actually he was asked to look into if he could. I didn't want to do that. I just had a bad feeling. I got a couple of air targets myself, and I just didn't want to go inside of it. It's not that, it made me feel very uncomfortable. But this Lance Corporal went and did it, and he was never the same afterwards. He never really described what it was he saw, but I think we got a good idea. But he wound up getting a psych eval.
Oh, really? So it kind of got into his head a little too much, huh?
Yeah, he couldn't sleep. He was always on a medical hold. He just couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. He didn't want to talk that much. He went into withdrawals and depression. So he looked inside was, that was something that I didn't want to duplicate at all.
And maybe you could help us out, too, with our listeners, because we have some new listeners to the paranormal field. Maybe you could give a little explanation of exactly what is remote viewing and how does it work. Are you psychic? Do you have to be psychic or sensitive in order to do this? Or can it be trained?
Yes. In fact, remote viewing is identifying an object or person at long distances and relating that information to another person in which they can use that information as far as intelligence, information gathering, and also for tactical and strategical advantages. To give you an example, during the Cold War, we had people here in the U.S., specifically in the Army, looking at objects and documents and during the Cold War in Russia and Soviet Union at the time, and not just there, other places. And the funny thing is they were doing the same thing as well. Ultimately, there's stages in this remote viewing process that you go from identifying a target like how many people are in the field near the border or how many vehicles are parked under this tarp. We're done with that. Now we're moving on to another level of, okay, there's an object moving towards Washington, D.C. Yeah, well, is it a jet? No, it's not a jet. It's not a plane. Then what is it? We don't know. It's unidentified. That's always been a problem. You just don't say, I'm looking at a UFO.
Right.
Because in the military, to do that, everyone knows the minute you say UFO and you're in a military unit, you're not going to be taken seriously. You won't get promoted, and there are consequences.
So you actually did this. Now, when you remote view, were you in a room? Do they have you looking at a white wall, a blank piece of paper, and then you just kind of let it go? Do they feed you any information? Like, all right, you're looking in the skies of Washington. It's a beautiful, blue, clear day, blah, blah, blah. Are they pre-feeding you any of that information? Front-loading, I guess you might call it.
No, they would limit that as much as they could. They would give us a map, and with inside on the map was either of these circles. Can you tell us what's going on in this area at this time? And then we would try to do that. In some cases, some of the guys that were in this project, they were remote viewing events days before they even happened. And that was a total different side project they were interested in as well. So it wasn't just that it was in real time. It was just, it was all inclusive. Like, we could see something taking place within a week. And then you're in a room. Next to your room is another group of individuals doing the same thing. And they take all this information, and they correlate it, and they compare that data. And they try to use that data in such a way that it's beneficial to the military or, you know, civilian.
Now, do you think anybody can learn to remote view, or do you have to have some kind of special sensitivity when you start this?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone can do this. Matter of fact, you might notice, like, when you were younger, when you had something that you shouldn't have in your pocket, where your parents were like, one of your parents went, hey, I know what you have. You might want to put that back. It's kind of like that. You don't really have to take it seriously. Just sit back and relax. You open your mind up to a specific person or place or an object and focus on that long enough that where you can identify its locations. The way we started was they would take personal items of ours and put them in another location, either within the building or outside the building, and our job was to find it. And out of like the 20 guys that were involved in that test that took 3 weeks, there was probably only 7 of us left. So it's not like everyone can get it at first. It's just different varying degrees. And some of the best people that do the work, they have 90 to 100 percentile hit on locating anything,
wow,
anything on the planet, above, underground, and in the ocean. That's a very scary technique.
Now, do you actually, when you're remote viewing, and I don't want to beat this too much, but it just is something that interests me, do you feel, I mean, are you just seeing this? Is it visual? Is it audio? Is it physical? Can you feel the touch of these things? Can you hear them? Can you see them, smell them? What exactly are you experiencing when you're looking in for one of these remote viewing sessions?
For me, when I do it, it's like looking into a very large microscope. You see there's nothing outside your field of perspective. You're actually seeing an object, and it gets closer, and the closer you get to it, the more identifiable it is. So if I'm looking for a person, I can almost feel, in essence, feel where that person's at, focus on that location, and then draw that information out. What are they wearing? How tall are they? Is it during the day or night? These are all things that you ask yourself as you're going along the process. You're trying to figure this out. You know when you're in a darkened room. The part of being in a darkened room is to find the flashlight. And that's kind of how this remote viewing that we do is applicable. Because you have to remember, too, I was in the military at the time, so it's a lot different from, okay, remote viewing, say, when law enforcement goes to a person who can speak or converse with the dead.
Right.
And this has happened many times where somebody's wife has called up and I had a dream that this person was killed by this individual, and they'll call law enforcement and they'll investigate it. And they have had positive outcomes from these investigations. It's the same type of remote viewing. It's just a little different, but it's the same type.
All right. Well, we got to take our first break here. When we come back, we're going to bring on the rest of the guys. Will have on with us JJ and Sean, so stick with us, and we'll be back with more. We're going to be talking about alien secrets and how to film UFOs right here on Darkness Radio. Good evening. Welcome back to Darkness Radio, your home for paranormal talk radio every Saturday and Sunday night. We're going to go back to our lines now, and we're going to bring online with us JJ and Sean. JJ, Sean, are you there with us now?
Hello.
Hi, can you hear us okay?
I can hear you pretty good.
Great, and is this Sean we're talking to?
Yeah, this is Sean Creighton.
All right, Sean, thanks a lot for joining us. And Danici, you're still online with us as well?
Yes, I am.
All right, Sean, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit to us? I know you're a high-speed visual specialist, and you've kind of the one that perfected the art of videotaping high-speed anomalous objects in UFOs, and you're kind of the co-developer of this method as well of viewing and recording UFOs in the Earth's atmosphere. Is that right?
That is correct.
How did you get involved in this field as well? I mean, were you seeing UFOs growing up? Was this something that was part of your daily life?
No, not exactly. Really what occurred was very serendipitous. You know, I really wasn't into anything like that. And I've been a musician most of my life, an artistic person, poet, you know, student. And really wasn't into anything metaphysical, didn't care anything about physics or anything like that. And I was with a bunch of friends in Angeles Crest National Forest, and we were all traipsing around in the woods really late and up into early in the morning. And as we were traversing an area in the woods, a friend of mine stopped everybody, and he was actually legally blind in one eye, and the other eye was terrible. He wore glasses, but he was the first person to see this crazy object.
Okay.
Hey, guys, what the bleep is that, you know?
Right.
And we're all stopping and kind of looking up there, and we're all kind of, you know, looking in the sky. And we do see this very bright object traveling in a kind of a straight line, basically not moving around, but changing colors and kind of glowing. And as we kept looking at it together, it started to move erratically, and then it moved at such a strange, it was almost as if you had a lens on it and you couldn't hold the camera still. That's what it looked like by itself with our naked eye. And then it zipped away, and everybody freaked out. We all were just like, what the hell was that? One of our friends who hadn't seen it, who was out in the bushes taking a leak or something, like, you guys are crazy. You didn't see anything. It was just an airplane. But everybody that saw it, we were pretty shaken up by it. And we stayed out in the woods all night long after that and didn't want to go home. Pretty freaked out just by the sight of this weird object that just moved in such an erratic fashion. It didn't seem to be very far away. It seemed to be just outside the trees. And the way it just took off, it was just too much. Not too long after that, I'm talking with my friend John Bro Wilkie, and we're hanging out at his place. And he's starting to tell me about these UFOs he's been seeing off of the 101 freeway in the San Fernando Valley. And I'm kind of, you know, I mean, at the time, I guess I was a little piqued because for me, I couldn't tell. I didn't think UFO. I couldn't really figure out what it was. I mean, UFO wasn't the first thing that came to mind, per se. You know, that was one of the things I thought, and that's one of the things people said a lot during the time we were there. But then he piqued my interest a little bit and said he'd been seeing a lot of stuff, and he described this object that he saw was like a white ball that kept going around in a circle, and he said it looked like it was putting blue puffs of smoke or something because it would disappear for a second, then come back, and then eventually just completely disappeared. Which was just weird to me, the whole idea of it, and but it intrigued me. And then he told me that he knew how to see UFOs. And then I said, you know, okay, John, that's pretty wacky.
Right.
And I didn't really believe him, really. I'm like, are you kidding me? He's like, look, seriously, Sean, you know me a long time, never been in any of this stuff, but I think I know how to see UFOs, and I want you to check it out. I just want you to take my word for it and just check it out. You don't have to believe what I'm saying, but please just come over to my house, and I'm going to show you what I've been doing, and then I want you to do it and tell me what you think. And, you know, based on the fact that I was slightly intrigued by my own experience, it was kind of weird. I did feel the truth in his voice. You know, I know John for a long, long time at the time. I'm like, well, okay. You know, so I went ahead and utilized a method that he had developed. He basically discovered it, and it was discovered by... He read a story in something around the Angeles Crest Forest. It was about a ranger who had been seeing a UFO in the sky every late evening, and whenever he tried to put his glasses on it, it would zip into the sun, and he wouldn't be able to see it. And then there was the mass UFO sighting in Mexico City, Mexico, at the solar eclipse. That was like a really big deal. And he just kept thinking, the sun, what's the deal with the sun? And what he started doing was he started blocking out the direct rays of the sun just using the overhang out in front of his apartment. And he would put on these dark welding glasses, and he would sit there and block the direct light out, and he would look into the emanating light coming from, you know, the coronal glow, I guess you could say. And he started noticing these anomalies utilizing this method. And he convinced me to do it, and I did try it. And I did see some pretty interesting stuff. And at the time, you know, being that it was new to me, I wasn't sure exactly what I was seeing, but there was definitely some stuff that appeared to be at a very, you know, far distant measurement from my eyes and moving at a very, very high rate of speed. So then he showed me some footage that he had taken with a video camera and told me how he set up his camera, and I thought that was pretty interesting. And the footage that he showed me was of this thing he called the Reseda saucer, because he was living in Reseda in the valley at that time. And it really did look like a little saucer. And that piqued my interest. So I did look for a long time, utilizing my eyes and blocking out the direct light of the sun, not looking into the sun, of course, because it'll blind you.
Right.
But using really, really dark sunglasses. Sometimes I'd be silly and put two or three pairs of sunglasses on just to make sure that I protected my eyes enough. And I would sit there and kind of lay back on the ground or just stand by a corner and block out the direct light of the sun facing south while the sun would traverse from left to right, from east to west. And I would notice some pretty interesting things with my eyes.
Now, Sean, are you noticing this other places, or do you have to be in this specific area in California to notice these things?
You know, I have been around a few different places, and I have seen anomalies in a lot of different places that I have been. But more so in the valley, I have to admit, more of what I've seen has been in Los Angeles.
Which is interesting. Last night we had on our show a gentleman who talked about ley lines and things that, you know, I guess near where Disneyland is, there's a huge faction of ley lines that overcross each other there, and it's a very powerful sight. And if you're seeing this in and around the Los Angeles and California area, I'm wondering if that is some kind of, you know, if the portal theory is true there, that that might be making what's a little bit easier for you to see there.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, that's an interesting interesting take on it. Now, so you've kind of done this. Denichi, what is your role? What do you do as a specialty for this with this team? What is your role in working with this group?
Well, some of the background in forensics, the things that we learned, that I learned in the military, I'm able to apply it now into the civilian sector, which is, if there's a sighting, something unusual, it's probably best to have someone that can come in and get information as from the witness, and also something in the field of operation where we're going to be investigating, which is there an EMF field? Are there any residual effects? One, the good thing about having Creighton around, a residual effect that we found is when there are UFO sightings, there is an abundance of these rods. And no other time, if you just film, it's as if they're almost comprised of each other for some reason, or it's like one comes after the other or before. It's very interesting. We haven't really been able to nail that one down, but there is factual evidence to where there's a UFO sighting, and if you set up your cameras right in that same area, you will pick up rods. It's not an if or speculation. No, these things do happen.
Interesting stuff. Guys, we got to take our second break of this hour, so stick with us. And listeners, you're listening to Darkness Radio, and we hope that you'll stick with us. We've got a lot more fascinating stuff to check in with. We'll be back with more. Keep listening to... Right now, you're in tune to Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Across the board, Mr. Tim Dennis. This evening, we're discussing aliens. We're discussing UFO filming and how to get this together. Now, is JJ on the line with us yet, guys? Do we have JJ there?
Yes, JJ's here. How are you?
Hey, JJ. Thanks for joining us. So I'm curious. You know, I was told about your group from a good friend of ours in our Tech Talk technician, Bill Murphy, on our radio show. He had informed me about this group that was doing this phenomenal work in UFO research, and that you were actually able to catch UFOs on a pretty regular basis on film. And, you know, he really kind of touted how fantastic you guys were at doing this job. So I appreciate you coming together. How did you put this team together, JJ? I mean, how did you guys all come together and find each other to, and not, you know, a lot of people in my world, if I started talking about, dude, I'm going to go out and start filming UFOs, they'd either roll me a fatty or they'd tell me, you know, I'm going to call your mom, you're acting weird, right? So how do you guys come together and all have this common interest and be willing to go out in the field and do this together?
Well, myself and Brandon Scott know Denichi and Sean, and we brought them in, and with the idea of doing some cutting edge type of work. I'm a filmmaker, and I was really fascinated by, you know, capturing the UFOs on videotape. And so we brought them together and found some kind of miraculous paranormal events tend to happen when they're all in the same room together. And I think Brandon's going to come on a little later, but the
Yeah, we're going to have Brandon on at the top of the third hour. We'll be bringing him in with you as well.
And Sean's really the one who's bringing in the optical, you know, conclusions with catching the UFOs on tape. And
well, now you're a filmmaker, so you have experience with cameras. Bill, who I trust implicitly and is a forensic video analyst, and you guys actually used his camera, and he got to watch the raw video that you shot using his camera, and he could see the stuff. And, he, you know, when he called me, he goes, Dave, this is some of the most unbelievable, fascinating images I've ever seen. Things that seem to be appearing and morphing and changing shape and blah, blah, blah. You know, now, and that was off raw footage, so there was no way, you know, a lot of people automatically are going to say, oh, this guy's involved in film industry and with the technology that people can have on their own computers at home, how easy is it to manipulate film to make it look like something that isn't there? But to have seen this raw footage, when you started experimenting with this, how, as a filmmaker, how did it feel for you to wrap your head around what you were experiencing and seeing?
Well, the interesting thing I found is that they're being caught on just about any type of camera, mostly, you know, home consumer video cameras or analog and digital both. And nothing super fancy, pretty much anything you pick up at, you know, Circuit City. And, of course, the idea is to experiment with all types of different lenses and cameras. But right now, pretty much anybody can capture these on tape using the method that Sean has created, co-created. And, you know, it's there's a bit of discipline involved. I think maybe he'd be a better person to tell you about that.
Well, let me ask too, guys, with the experiences that you've done, we have a question from Catherine in our chat room. She says she saw a UFO in California. It was during a meteor shower. Is there a greater occurrence of sightings during meteor showers? And she was wondering if maybe they come in from space to avoid things like that. Have you ever found that makes it easier? Or I know you mentioned a little bit earlier during the solar eclipse, you were able to capture some amazing footage. Have you ever found that there are times of year or certain celestial events that are going on that make it easier?
You know, that's really subjective. I think it really is defined more by a few different things at the same time, one being the will of the individual who's putting their time and effort into actually capturing anything, utilizing their equipment in the best way fashionable to actually accomplish the task, and also weather conditions. You know, these are physical objects. You're using optics. You want to capture something and see it. You don't want to have anything clouding your vision, specifically clouds, excuse the pun.
Right.
And really, it's just a simple matter of having a good clear sky on a decent day. The stuff that I do and what I promote for people to check out is daytime anomalies, more than nighttime anomalies. That's really, I know I have a lot of friends who are very, very interested in UFOs and spend a lot of time watching the sky and watching, you know, satellites and everything else and lining stuff up and understanding what's happening in the sky. And I definitely think that there's a validity to all of that. But what I've been doing is between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3, 4 p.m., when the sun is at its height, I can really, utilizing that blocking technique, really see what's going on up there. And the thing about it is it takes a lot of discipline in terms of really taking the time with it. If you're just going to glance up there and you're just going to kind of not even try and you're not going to allow your eyes to focus on their own, if you're impatient and you're not really willing, the chances of really seeing anything, it slims because of that. It doesn't mean that you won't, because amazing things do happen with each individual. They do seem to attract their own frequency. But really, you do have to have some intent and some will behind it and some patience. That's really important because, honestly, in my particular case, I spent over a month filming this stuff and not getting anything. And I was getting really frustrated and kind of feeling pretty silly and stupid for wasting all this tape. And, you know, the only reason why I did was because I had seen some things on other tape footage filmed by somebody else. So for me, it was like, I really want to capture this on my own. I mean, you know, it was kind of a Daffy Duck thing, and I wanted the Pearl too.
Right. Now, Sean, let me ask you this, though. I know, especially with older video cameras, you would get what they call lens burn. If you were filming, you know, bright lights, things that were glaring, and when you'd move the camera, it'd actually leave trails and sometimes amorphous little artifacts, I think they called them, for film.
Right.
Is that, do you have any suspect that that might be what's occurring with the cameras now? Is it maybe it's not UFO activity, it's something, it's just artifacts from the sun and the light burning itself onto the lenses and the screens? And how do you attack something like that if there's a skeptic involved?
When you videotape anything that's moving in front of a camera, it is highly subjective. There's no doubt about that. And there is going to be a large percentage of illumined objects that are close to the camera, that are being spread out by the lens, that might appear to be something that they're not. They're moving erratically because they're so small that the air moves them around in such a fashion that on camera they appear to be large and moving at some crazy, miraculous angles. So you have to be very careful about the kind of footage that you're looking at. You can easily mistake a lot of things, insects, birds, for UFOs and other anomalies.
Now, I know you're a specialist with high-speed visual. So when you're videotaping this, how slow do you have to slow the film down in order to see these? Are they happening between, are they one frame out of every 14 that are shot? I mean, how does that work? And is this, or is it something that you see actually happen over film?
Well, the bottom line is this. When they say high-speed visual specialist, and that's basically my own self-proclaimed title.
Okay.
And what that means is, for whatever purpose or reason, after so many years of watching anomalies and watching them on videotape of all different grades, of different speeds, at high-speed shutter, low-speed shutter, your eyes do, like a baseball player, your eyes get accustomed to moving objects that are moving at a high rate of speed. It's kind of an upgrade of your visual ability.
Sure.
If you focus enough on something moving fast, your eyes will learn to see things moving fast. And other individuals may not be as quick to see the same type of objects that you are.
You know, it's interesting. I do a lot of sky watching myself. And like when we were out at the Ysetti Ranch out in Trout Lake, Washington, we were watching the skies. And, it's jet black and there's just these millions of stars everywhere. And I kept picking up stuff moving around. James, who lives there, sees this stuff. And everybody's like, how the hell are you picking out something that moves that fast out of a whole star sky, like that? And, I guess you're right. Once you just start getting tuned to it and you know what to look for, it just starts making itself a lot more visible. People could see it when we point it out, whether it be satellite or whatever, but you start getting used to watching for certain things in the sky and you'll start to notice them. And I notice that even about my own exploration in this field.
Absolutely. Well, where there's a will, there's a way.
Right.
And it's really about putting time in. In my particular case, and mainly doing daytime stuff with a bright illumination,
mm-hmm.
when you have that backlighting effect occur in the sky, it does create a different aspect to viewing because it kind of opens a window to a certain degree. And after you look at enough tape and you've captured enough stuff, and we're talking about, focusing way out, not close. So a lot of stuff that are going to be in front of the camera at a close range are going to be more blurry. And we're talking about solid objects that can be noted by an expert moving at extremely high rates of speed that are definitely, solid, fast-moving objects far away. So, the thing about it is there are things that are going to happen in the local atmosphere that are much closer, and personally I have seen things happen right before my eyes as if something swooped down at an extremely high rate of speed,
right.
Extremely quiet. I'll give you one example of something very miraculous.
Well, let me ask you real quick again, just so we have some clarification on this. I have some people beating me up in the room for not following up. So when you're reviewing the videotape, do you see it happen? I mean, is it something you can watch, or is it something you have to go frame by frame in order to be able to witness this on video?
Well, after a while, I am able to see what I want to see just watching in real time.
Okay.
But what ends up happening is, of course, still, we have to go back before that time, and we do frame by frame everything. Anything that comes up that's significant, we're going to stop, and we're going to look at each frame.
Right, to make sure it isn't a bird or a fly or something.
Fields.
Right. All right.
Between 3 and 7 fields a lot of times is what you're going to get.
Okay.
In a split second.
All right, and then now you've been doing this technique for how long?
Since about 94, 95.
How often do you go out filming and looking for UFOs?
Honestly, in the latter part of the last 2 or 3 years, I have actually stopped filming.
And oh, really?
That's a good reason for that. One, because I'm satisfied personally.
Right.
And, I'm not Chicken Little. I'm not trying to go tell the whole world anything. I did spend a lot of time communicating with people, speaking on this subject, sharing my videotape footage, and encouraging people to film. But it really is one of those things that, just like anything else, it takes some work, it takes time, effort, and some expense. And when it boils down, there's a lot of people that really aren't willing to take the time, that aren't cognizant of what it means and what the protocols are asking for, just
right.
The physical setting up of camera equipment, utilizing the camera, setting up the camera at the right shutter speeds, and stomping
we find that
the right right way, all these different things. It makes it more complicated. It's not as simple as it could be when you really start getting into it. And for myself personally, I'm done. In terms of knowing what this stuff does, I really have nothing to prove. This has been going around the world on its own since John Bro, my partner, who originally discovered this methodology, put it out on the internet. And it's made it all the way around to, you know, South Korea, where they're utilizing this methodology, and they're using the tops of skyrises with high-powered lenses, and they're blocking out the sun at the top of a skyrise, and they're capturing anomalies that, based on distance, et cetera, make it pretty clear that something's up there.
We have to take another break, guys. Stick with us. We're going to come back with more. And if you have questions, you can certainly give us a call up if you have questions for the guys. We'll be back with more on Darkness Radio. Good evening. Welcome back to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Darkness Radio, we're here with you every Saturday and Sunday night, 9 to midnight. Hey, come on out and meet Tim and I and Adrian. We're going to be out at the Healthy Life Expo October 18th and 19th at the Hopkins Eisenhower Community Center at 1001 Highway 7 in Hopkins, Minnesota. If you're interested, you can come out, join us, see us. There's a lot of great speakers talking about holistic health and metaphysical talks. You can get all the information at MediaMaxEvents.com. Again, that's MediaMaxEvents.com. And Mike, if you or Delia are in the room, in the chat room, you could throw that link up. That'd be great. And hopefully we'll see you guys out there at the Healthy Life Expo coming up this weekend, October 18th and 19th, Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Sunday 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. We're going to go back into tonight's guests. And right now we're talking UFOs and how to film them. And now, do you have a website, Sean, too, that people can go? I know you've written a book, an ebook people can get. Where can they go buy this book so that they can learn how to use your technology or your methodology to videotape UFOs?
Actually, Joseph knows where that link is. Personally, I don't buy my own stuff, so I don't know where it is.
you can find that on our website at aliensecrets.com.
So it's at aliensecrets.com. You can pick up a copy of that book.
Dave? I want to make something clear about all of this, and I want to make it clear that, you know, as I said, I'm not filming and trying to gather any more evidence at this point personally.
Right.
It doesn't mean that there isn't plenty of evidence being gathered.
Sure.
And the bottom line is what happened when I learned this methodology and I employed it and I utilized it, and I utilized it for years, and I still do. I still look, definitely. And, you know, I just don't have to put up a camera anymore. But the thing is, this has opened up so many doors on so many other levels besides just anomalous stuff happening in the local atmosphere. And depending on the individual and their will to be visited and to be to interact with ET, so to speak, This definitely can give you an option. And when I say that, you know, there's a lot of things that happen before our eyes that are moving so fast because of the different physics of different beings that exist and how they maneuver through our world. That, you know, there's definitely a lot more than meets the eye. And when you speed up that brain a little bit, you can really start to open up doors to seeing other things. And I have experienced some very profound things besides seeing, you know, so-called UFOs and different anomalies in the sky. I've seen things happen in my home. I've seen objects coming across long distances and fly right past my ear and a friend of mine right between us, not knowing how fast it was going, but moving so fast it was incredible and totally silent. I mean, there's a lot of different things that you will see if you do employ this type of methodology.
Do you recommend that to people?
Technique, which you can look up.
Do you recommend that to people? I mean, have you had negative experiences with aliens?
I have had no negative experiences that I would say are negative anyway.
Now, you mentioned a lot to do with intent. If people have the intent and the will and the want to see and experience this thing, they seem to. I'm guessing that probably goes the same way. If you have the will and want and intent to deal with the negative and that's what you focus on, that's most likely what you're going to open the door to.
Well, you know, the thing is, I'm pretty much a Taoist because of this, and I really don't see evil the same way other people see it. I don't embrace it. I don't accept it. And with the UFOs and the alien stuff, you know, the unknown is scary as hell, and it scared the hell out of me a few times, definitely. I mean, I was scared, really scared, especially when you come close to interaction with something outside of yourself that is not of this world. That's going to scare the hell out of your primal fear, I can guarantee it.
Right.
And I'm pretty much not scared of most anything. So, you know, definitely, you know, I mean, your fear is your worst enemy in this world.
Right.
And, you know, by facing your own fear and having some strength and resolve, you can have some powerful and profound experiences that will bolster you, and your fear will be eliminated through experience.
Was there anything that you would do prior to this besides setting up equipment? Was there any meditation regime or anything that you would put yourself through?
You know, not a specific meditation, but definitely, you know, just
listen to a little air supply or something to get yourself in the mood.
You know, no, nothing specific. I mean, really cold, good drink of water, some healthy body, healthy mind, the best you can. And, you know, I used to hold crystals. I do Tibetan chanting and things of that nature. You know, I'm a musician, an artist.
Right. Do you find that by employing music that you get better response? Do you find that if you employ music while you're out trying to do this, do you get a better response?
I'll tell you, the best response is when you have a bunch of people together. And the thing is, though, you got to make sure everybody's down and there's not somebody naysaying the whole time. Even if they're thinking it inside their head, that's fine. You know, people are going to doubt.
Right.
But you just can't have any, you know, Debbie Downers hanging around dampening the energy.
Exactly. I'm with you on that.
You know, you definitely have people that are intent on seeing something, that are open-minded. Open-mindedness is extremely important.
Why are they hiding in the sunlight? Is it just because we won't look at it and we can't see it? Is that what they're using to cloak it? And how many different ships or things are up there at any one time, do you believe?
Hundreds. Can you imagine about, you know, a UFO can fly from a long distance, okay? They come in and out of our atmosphere without any problem. Nothing's blocking them. Nothing's stopping them. They're traveling lots of miles. They're doing whatever they want. And, you know, they're here all the time. And they're here during the day, during the night. They're coming in whenever they feel like it. They're not worried about the same things that that biased earthlings are worried about.
Yeah, I like to add something to that. You know, our military, not just our military, all the militaries on this planet all together want to feel that they're safe and secure in the knowledge that they can protect its citizens. They know for a fact there's nothing that they can do about these things coming and going at will that are affecting people's lives. There's nothing. If they could, they would have made it public. And speaking of the rod information negative aspect, I don't know if you guys know about that 2002 event with Brandon Mowry, when he actually filmed by accident for Fox 23 News. By accident, he filmed a rod. He goes back to the editing bay. They find it on one of the videotapes that they're trying to edit. They call the police because they think that this is some type of missile being, you know, launched at an aircraft. Well, when the Albany police came in, they saw the video, and they were so worried about it, they contacted the FBI. They took it seriously. They took it so seriously that they brought Mr. Mowry in and actually gave him a polygraph a couple of days later. And even though he passed the polygraph, it was a negative experience for him because that's not what he went out there for. He just went in to get shots for the show. And now he's being interrogated by the FBI wanting to know what these rods are. What I find fascinating about that is that it's 2002 and the FBI didn't have any information about rods. I mean, if they just contacted someone like, you know, Creighton, they would have found out. But it's just very unusual that we're living in a time where people are just now hearing about it. These things should already be out. It should be explained and make people's lives more easier to deal with these aspects.
I agree with you on that. And, guys, I want to thank you for being a part of the show for this part of the hour. I know, Sean, you're going to be taking off. We're going to be bringing Brandon Scott on the line to talk about the alien hybrids and continue on with this. I appreciate the time you spent with us, Sean. We'd love to have you talk more with us. And we're also going to be holding an event in August at the Trout Lake UFO Ranch, and I'd love to have you come out and maybe share some of your thoughts and ideas with people there as well.
That sounds like a lot of fun, and I'd be looking forward to it. And if anybody wants to check out any of my music, it's badmothermotor.com. We'll take you to my MySpace. It's badmothermotor.com.
Great. Sean, thanks a lot.
On the internet, look up the John Bro technique and look up solar obliteration if you want to learn a little bit more about the technique, or get my ebook, and that'll give you step-by-step instructions.
We will do that. Sean, thanks a lot for being with us. Danichi, hang on with us. JJ, hold on. We're going to come back. We're going to add Brandon Scott. You guys are listening to Darkness Radio.